Today's episode is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is your one-stop shop for all clothing, all the basics that you need. They believe in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. I've used it. It was super easy. Got some great stuff. I got some t-shirts, some underwear, some socks. And you know what? I look great. I feel great. And that's all thanks to Mack Weldon. The best part is their products are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. You don't have to worry about stanking up the room after you've been walking around all the known universe, because you can trust that their fabrics will have your back, quite literally. And you know what? They want you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair, it doesn't fit quite right, you can keep it. They will still refund you, no questions asked.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Razzle.
I'm going to interrupt your speed because I love it. And I want to let you know that I like Mack Weldon because I bought some clothes and I like what I'm wearing.
Yeah, you look good. Usually you just show up wearing like literal garbage just pasted together into like a human quilt of misery.
Hey, man.
But today you look you put together.
Because Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now.
Yeah, I'm wearing Derelict from Zoolander. Speaking, it's like high fashion garbage.
I like it.
I'm wearing
Mack Weldon's great. Their socks are great. Their underwear's great. I got a pair of sweatpants, and they're great.
Yeah, and not only do Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, sweatpants, shirts, not only do they look good, they perform well, too.
Yep.
And, you know, they're good for working out, going on dates, ladies, or dudes, whatever you're into, and just everyday life. So do us a favor. Do us a solid. Go to MackWeldon.com. Get 20% off your order using the promo code TWL, as in today we learned. MackWeldon.com, 20% off your order, promo code TWL.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Today We Learned. We got a great episode for you guys today. Really great guest. Really, really informative. Really interesting stuff about, you know, his childhood and things like that. And then some fun facts sparkle in between and all that type of stuff. Really, really full of knowledge and good chat. Today we have a guest from the we have another guest, actually. This is guest number two superhero this week, this year so far, from the CW's Legends of Tomorrow. He plays Hawkman, ladies and gentlemen. He plays Carter Hall. It's a very great guest, very, very cool guy, and it's a very good show. So everybody check that out. It airs on Thursday nights on the CW. So without further ado, today we learn number 119 with Falk Henschel.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Today We Learn. I'm excited about this episode. This is going to be a fun episode. We got a great guest. You've seen him on The Arrow, The Flash, Night and Day, White House Down. He's the new Hawkman, ladies and gentlemen, on CW's Legends of Tomorrow. If you're not driving, please give a warm round of applause to Mr. Falk Henschel.
What's up, everybody?
How you doing?
Dude, you got one of those great voices. I just got to say real quick.
That's just the intro, though. Now I'm going to talk like this.
No, you really do, man. I'm listening to him going like, oh, yeah.
Thank you. That means powerful. A lot. That means a lot. People, I've been told throughout the years that I should like really try getting into voiceover or anything like that.
Sure.
I don't know. I have access to studio for demos and all that, but I still have no clue. Like, that's one industry where it's like, because I can control my voice pretty well, and I can do decent amount of different types of voices and tonality wise, but that's one industry that's like, how do you
even audiobooks.
Do that?
Like, if you read an audiobook to me, I would listen to it.
Yeah,
like, you get one of those voices.
Yeah,
like, and what's another one? Dan Carlin. You guys know Dan
Carlin?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
He's another one where I'm like, it's just engaging voice. Anyway. Yeah.
And he was, go ahead. And he stepped in the hallway. And he walked. He hesitantly set the coffee down, and he goes, "What's this?" I don't know. I definitely am not an author, that's for sure. I'll read the books. I just can't make them up on the spot here. Falk, so as you know, because I told you literally 2 minutes ago when I was explaining the show to you, we like to start off the episode with the guest providing either a fun fact about themselves or something you learned recently. It can be from a new Snapple fact to a new way to tie your shoe. No rules, anything.
Okay. Or that my phone just goes.
Yeah, or that your phone has a beep.
I turned it off. Oh, no, it was a reminder.
Oh.
About the show.
Oh, what do you know? That's great.
Does it have to be light?
It can be anything. It can be anything. It can be as deep. Like it can be something like if you're into something.
It's going to be deep.
If you're into something that's really you know it can be. It doesn't need to be. There's no rules.
Well, I'll say two things. The two things that I've kind of rocked my world a little bit in the last month altogether were Spotlight, the movie, and Making a Murderer.
Okay.
And both of them combined have just sort of made me realize I am, you know, I was much more naive than I thought.
Yeah.
Not being originally from the United States. Just sort of being like, damn, like the system is messed up and just everybody's corrupting everywhere.
Isn't it?
And I should know. I'm in Hollywood. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, there's the most
it's
corrupt business.
Smoke and mirrors, yeah.
Yeah, that was just sort of, I guess, yeah, that's one thing I learned about myself. I'm like, wow, I really had more faith in society and humanity than it deserves.
It's tough because, like, Spotlight was a great movie. I watched Spotlight, and I loved it. And it's, you watch that, though, and you realize, like, I remember reading headlines and stuff like that as it was happening, back in the day. And I remember, like, holy cow, and this Cardinal's resigning and all that, spoiler alert, you know, but he did. It's like you really think about like these major towns like Los Angeles or Boston or, you know, that have this big, this deep like core of a value, be it, you know, like Catholicism or even like unions or anything like that, where there's so much ties to just loyalty in the town. And, you know, then you have kids and they're loyal and so on. And it's like it's really like a baffling thing. Like it's scary. And then you watch Making Murder. Now, I didn't watch it. But you've watched it. You can spoil it because everybody's like, I'm probably not going to watch it because everybody binge watched it over the holidays and just kind of live tweeted everything. But what was your?
I got sick the next day.
Did you watch it all?
And I watched it all. And then after I finished it, and I'm a big believer in energies and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I fell sick. I got really sick, weak, and I was just like not feeling good because it was just really great filmmaking and wonderfully done, but it was just really hard to take.
Yeah.
That you really see, whoa, this is really corrupt. And a common theme in both of them, many themes, but one of them that is really similar is our sort of in both projects, you hear people say, whoa, these great clergymen, they would never do something wrong. These great policemen, how dare you accuse them of something bad? Where I'm like, yo, people, they're just. This police dude, you know, was born as a guy. He's got all kinds of – he's just a normal human being, and we put him on this pedestal saying, like, you know, they can't do no wrong. Same with the clergy. And it was just really interesting to see that and how many people really believe that the system can do no wrong and don't accuse it.
Absolutely. Or it's even like, you know, most recently, like, look at Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Everything that's going on with him is it's like – they're human. Everybody's a human being with faults and weaknesses, whether or not, you know, that's a legal and right thing to do. You know, I'm not condoning any of this.
Right.
But in the end, it's like they're still a human being. Like even Training Day, it's like he's still a cop, but he's a crooked cop.
Right.
It's like still, you know, decisions that need to be made, and everybody's got, you know.
And to be honest with you, I want to always try as hard as I can to stay away from judging because you never know what even the most, you know, evil, in quotation marks, people are coming from.
Exactly.
So I don't want to judge it, but the common denominator that, back to the original question that you asked, that shocked me was sort of the, you know, the blind faith that we put into the system and how little we actually just use rational thinking. Like, just look at what's in front of you, listen, pay attention, and see if you believe this, if this is true or not, you know?
Yeah.
And, that was shocking, something new I learned about myself.
It's there's definitely something to be said about listening and just and like taking everything in before you form a judgment or anything like that, because even with like courts and facts and things like that, you still have to there's facts and you listen. And like I try not and I'm glad you actually said that, because you, as much as there's, you know, a line between black and white when it comes to like legal and not legal or whatever, there's still say someone robs a bank or whatever, but it's like, are they robbing a bank to, you know, pay for people with cancer or something like that? Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's such a tough thing, but in the scheme of the law, it's like, well, I mean, that's a bummer, you know, but it's definitely, like, you just, you know, listen and look at the, you know,
and make up your own mind. Don't just make up the mind that you've been taught by our society. You know, like cops are always right. They would never do anything. Or whatever it is, you know, like just kind of be open, you know, to make your own decisions.
Yeah. Now, you were born in Leipzig. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, yeah, that was very
Leipzig, which is the largest city, for those of you that don't know, in the federal state of Saxony, Germany. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something I also didn't know. There are states. Germany, much like the United States, Germany has states, only they're called federal states.
They call. Do you want the German name?
Yeah, yeah, yes, please.
They're called Bundesländer.
Okay.
Which means unity counties, I guess.
Okay.
Would be the direct translation. But yeah, it's like a state.
Okay. And there's 16 of them.
You know more than I do.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go with you.
I just know because I can read things that other people put on the internet. I'm all fake smart. I'm smart if I have a screen in front of me. Leipzig, one of Germany's top 15 cities by population, is located about 160 kilometers, 99 miles southwest of Berlin, at the confluence of the White Elster, Pleiße, and Parth rivers at the southerly end of North German Plain. Leipzig played a significant role in instigating the fall of communism in Eastern Europe through events which took place in and around St. Louis Church. Yeah. Now, do you...
And St. Nicholas Church, actually.
Yeah, St. Nicholas Church. Do you know what types of events, like...
Yeah.
Because I also have your... You didn't relocate. You escaped. Correct? Or is that...
It's a long story, but it's funny that you bring this up. You're the first...
Because this intrigues me. As someone who's been born and raised in the United States you know, somewhat middle class, you know, I didn't have a horrible life growing up. And every time I hear things and I meet people that, you know, relocate from other countries that are, you know, my age, you know, relatively, because I think we're pretty much the same age. And I just remember hearing and, you know, you see things like Rocky IV and knowing about the Cold War and all of that stuff going on over there as a kid. Then when I meet, you know, adults.
I love that you just referenced Rocky for the thing that informs us about Cold War. I love that.
Because as a kid, that's visual, and you realize, you know, these countries are hating each other.
Totally, yeah.
And then you see these icons about the Berlin Wall and things like that. So it always interests me when I meet other people my age who grew up on the other side of
You're the first one that ever asked me that question in the States.
Okay.
I've talked about this in Germany a couple of times. But, yeah, no, I was really aware of it. I was 7 years old when we left. And to wrap that up as fast as I can, we applied – I think it took us 6 years. We applied 4 to 6 years for a travel visa, which were hardly given out. And once you apply for that, you're pretty much on the radar. They sort of check you out. What, you know, are you an enemy of the state kind of deal? And the whole story, actually, my family is quite interesting because my parents were one of the first members of the St. Nikolai movement, which was one of the demonstrations that started what you just referenced. And that's no joke. And then also we had, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but in the family, we also had a member.
Well, this is being recorded, so please throw people under the bus.
Okay. No, because it's like we said before, there is no good or bad.
Yeah.
I don't want to judge. It's just my history. Also in my family, an older family member was actually part of the Stasi, which was secret police. So within my family, we had my parents who were fighting for freedom and wanted the Berlin Wall to come down. And then in the same family, you probably had somebody that could have easily spied on them. And there was a huge conflict in that. And I think it really benefited us in the end that we had that family member being part of the system, because I think actually we could have gotten in much more trouble than any of us ever realized. You know, my parents were taken away, interviewed, interrogated, thought that they would never come back from those interviews. But that's what it was.
Yeah, and you're 7 years old when they're going.
I'm seven years old, so I'm not aware of this. You know, this is stories that have then been told. I've read my file. You know, you get a file when you come to West Germany that you can get that is all the reports on you from the secret police.
Because the east, where you were at on the east side of it was more of the, like the west was kind of like
free.
Free, right.
Completely free, yeah.
The east was
Governed by Russia.
Okay.
The west was governed by the United States and England, the allies.
Yeah.
So once we went to the west, just recently actually, we finally got our files. And those are really... kind of funny to look through, for me at least, because you hear things like the youngest son, six-year-old Falk, made a comment about what a nice day it is and he wants to go play. But his parents say, no, you have to stay home, do your homework or whatever. So there was somebody tapping our room, hearing these things. And then you read it, you know, 20 years later in a file. And you just sort of go, wait, this is just in movies. This is in the movies I want to play. But it actually happened in my family. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. And you you applied for the visas and they allowed you to move?
They didn't, or you actually escaped? No, we did not escape.
You weren't crawling through tunnels or anything?
The story I was told was that, I might get this wrong, but the gist of it is right. Yeah. My mom or my dad, or both, I don't know which one of them, were called in to a final interview by the same officer that had sort of been, not torturing clearly, but what do you call it, hackling them. And basically said, look, if you stay quiet from now on and don't do these demonstrations, because my parents were really vocal about it, you know, we'll let you go. And it was kind of like a final threat, like, shut up and we'll let you go. If you don't, we'll make sure you disappear kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
And then they finally, half a year later, ironically, only 9 months or 10 months before the wall came down, when it fell, we were allowed to leave. And we had no idea that the wall was going to fall.
Yeah.
So for us, it was like, you know, escaped communism in a way. And then the wall fell when we were in West Germany.
Yeah. The Berlin Wall was constructed and built from 1961 to 1989. And its demolition officially began on June 13th, 1990, and was completed in 1992. So it took 2 years, apparently.
Giant wall.
No, I was looking because – and I couldn't find exactly any maps to completely understand, to figure out where it was or anything like that. But so you're on the east side, and because there was East and West Berlin.
Uh-huh, correct.
Now, is that that's the state of Berlin, or is that cause, or is that like towns? Because I couldn't.
The city of Berlin was had the big wall.
The big wall divided.
Divided, yeah.
Just through the city, or did it divide the entire country of?
No, the
East and West Germany.
It did divide the entire country, but it wasn't a solid wall at all points. It was fenced, you know. Fences with electric fences. Fences with barbed wire, guards. There was big stretches of no man's land where it was just a fence. You know, where a lot of the escapes happened.
Okay, where it was like uncivilized, almost like farmland type of thing.
Correct. And you know, I think after every escape, they probably put up more guards and all that stuff. And it not only did it go through Germany, as far as I'm correct, I might do this wrong now, but along Hungary, all the way along the east and west border that sort of divided up the countries, I guess, continent.
Okay.
Because I know that Hungary was a big reason why the wall could fall. Basically, they had – their fence was going down, was just needed repair work.
Okay.
And Hungary went to Moscow to talk to Gorbachev and basically said, look, we can either renew this and spend a shit ton of your money because they were substituting every satellite country, or we just won't repair it. And Gorbachev, who was then a big – help to bring down the wall, said, all right, we'll just let it go down and I won't do anything about it. And that's when everybody traveled up through Hungary and escaped over the fences, and the guards just wouldn't let them. They wouldn't do anything about it.
Oh, wow.
And then that's how it sort of trickled down, and they couldn't keep the citizens in any longer. The wall was built to keep people in, not to keep people out.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, I can't even, like, just the idea of, like, you're stuck in that. And in the east side there.
Yeah.
Like, people can come in.
Yeah.
You just can't get out.
Not all. It blows my mind. You can go to the east.
You're a prisoner of your own state, of your own country.
Yeah, correct.
Unless you go further, I guess, unless you want to go to a different communist country, you probably could have gone to, like, Russia or stuff like that. Yeah.
That was always the joke. Like, well, communism is so glorious, or socialism, whatever you want to call it. If it's so glorious, then why do we need a wall to keep our citizens in, you know?
That's wild. Well, I'm glad you made it.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations. Tell your parents they did good, right work.
Thank you.
And that's tough too, I guess, if you're, you know, like even now with, like, you know, you have these good causes that, you know, people protest and people stand up and they fight for. And to be able to almost say, like if I wanted to go somewhere and I'm standing up for this cause, and to be able, like, have people say, hey, you can't go unless you stop vocally believing what you believe, like, I mean, that's got to be, you know, that's just, That's a tough thing to do, too, you know?
Absolutely.
Says you worked in London here as a professional backup dancer.
That is a true story.
Yeah. For artists such
is that
as...
Wikipedia?
I found this on Wikipedia. And I talked to your parents. No. I talked to your uncle and
you
the Germany police. Yeah. I'm sending these tapes to your uncle in Germany. Or
I love
whoever.
That you made my uncle. He's not your uncle. I'm just going to say
well, he says he's your uncle. He's a spy.
Okay. That we didn't know about.
You were a backup dancer for artists such as Mariah Carey, Britney Spears, Paulina Rubio, don't know her, Jamelia, don't know, and others. But I know Mariah and I know Britney. Later, you were hired as a choreographer and worked on many music videos in Canada and Asia.
The way they were is so funny. But yeah, I mean, in the basics, it's true, yeah.
How was that? What was that like? How did you go from leaving Germany to becoming a professional backup dancer? Mariah Carey and Britney Spears were arguably at that time the biggest, pop stars at the time.
To put that out there in the front of this answer to your question is Mariah and Britney. This is the funny part of the internet or interviews and that kind of stuff. I worked for them, but those were actually my least dancing jobs.
Okay.
In the Britney video, which was called "Why Don't You Do Something," it was actually one of the not so successful.
Okay.
We got hired to be backup dancers and freestyle, but we ended up being somewhat very glorified extras. So that's that. And then Mariah, similar thing. She did a live performance in London, and she hired local guys to be part of the show. We didn't even dance. I think we pretended to be reporters and posed and, you know, did kind of dancey moves. But anyway, those are those two. And then... the reason I did that was because it was technically Gene Kelly, mainly Patrick Swayze's and Fred Astaire's fault, because in Germany there was no real acting industry for kids.
Okay.
In general, the acting industry, you started out with theater, which I just wasn't – I didn't want to start with theater. I wanted to start with film and TV and what I liked. And so my mom was the one that showed me Dirty Dancing, and then I just in general got a lot of interest in dance films. And she said, listen, they were all dancers first. Maybe you can do a similar path. She was just desperate to try to help me how to get to this acting thing that she had no idea of how to do it. And then that's what set me off. I had a little career in Germany and danced for a lot of the local artists. Then I moved to London, what you just talked about. And then I moved to the States. And this is where I sort of started choreographing and teaching. Yeah, and then sort of traveled with teaching and choreographing. Worked for a lot of Canadian artists and for a couple of Asian artists. And then once I made the transition, I was working parallel. I did a couple of co-star smaller parts in film. But then once I really was certain I can, you know, let it go, I transitioned out of dance full-time into acting.
Okay.
Which was about now 7 years ago.
Okay, that's awesome. Paulina Rubio is a Mexican singer, actress, television music competition judge, hostess, model, and businesswoman. She's often referred to as Queen of Latin Pop, the Latin Madonna, La Chica Dorada, which means the Golden Girl. Did you just do a video with her, or did you tour with her?
No. I did a little tour with her. We did a couple of promo gigs. We did a giant show. I don't know what the equivalent would be in the U.S. It was called Top of the Pops.
Okay.
And CD UK. It's like... You know, the lip sync, you know, when the lip sync shows were really in, when all the acts came on and they brought their dancers and there was a live audience, but nobody really sang. Very rarely did they sing.
Yeah.
I did a lot of those with her and then went all over Europe with her. And I had checkered hair. I had like shaved little bits of.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if you might find pictures of that. Yeah, and then I never work with her in the States, actually. I work with her all over Europe, but not in the States.
What was your – in that time of life, like touring and dancing and all that, and you're, you know, probably 22, 23 young. I mean, that's, you know, as big as you can get at that time, you know, doing – you know, traveling the world on someone else's dime and all that. What was – what's your favorite part about that? Like, what was the coolest place you went to or maybe experience in the downtime of like a tour or whatever?
You know, part of the sad thing is that because you're so young and you're so caught up in trying to make it and you know, I was dealing with my visa stuff back then and all that, a lot of it I didn't take in as much as I would take it in now. And I didn't appreciate it as much as I do now because I was so caught up in the misery of like, oh, I'm going to get to where I want. And like, you know, it's everything's so hard. But I do remember what I did like a lot. Always have, still do, is the travel, obviously. I performed in Verona, I remember that, in Italy, in a giant open-air coliseum, like the ruins of one, which was just a breathtaking venue. And it was, I want to say tens of thousands of people. So it was just the sea of lights, you know, they were having their phones out, or I think back then, their lighters.
Yeah. Is that something that used to be a thing?
Yeah,
lighters used to be a thing, and then now
it's just blue lights. It's crazy how we already got used to that.
And
that? Yeah, but you know, seeing that kind of stuff, or in general, being on stage, I've been on a couple of stages with, you know, 20,000 people in London in the arena and stuff, and standing there when you come out and seeing those masses of people come out for, not for you as a dancer, but for the artist that you're supporting, you know, coming out to celebrate his art and this artist celebrating the audience is a really unique experience that I really am glad I got to be a part of.
That's great. Yeah, I just can't even imagine. Like, I mean, I do stand-up comedy on occasion, and like,
nice.
I've done,
that's awesome.
And I used to be in a band in my early 20s, and we would do some like bigger radio shows in front of maybe 1 to 2,000 people, a couple. We didn't do like a ton, but I remember like that always just being so fun and just like. But I can't even imagine like doing like 10,000 or whatever in like these arenas or even like in a Roman Colosseum. Like that just right. is.
Well, it's very similar though. I feel like that once I actually think the smaller the number, the more nerve wracking it is because it's more intimate. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
Like you could see people's faces.
That's
and
true.
You can see
yeah.
their reactions.
At some point, they just become like a
blur.
It's just a blur.
It's just a mass, and you feel the you know. I always yeah. talk about energy, but like you feel
oh, yeah.
that. But like yeah, I think it's very similar. There's something about live audiences that.
Yeah.
You know,
it's instant reception or instant,
yes.
you know,
yes.
Response
yes. on both ends.
Yeah.
You know, I think going to a concert too, you know, it's instant and it's just, yeah, it's a buzz of energy that you don't get when you sit in front of the TV.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. I love it. Verona is a city straddling the Adige River in Veneto, northern Italy, with approximately currently 265,000 inhabitants. And one of the seven chieflayas of the region. It is the second largest city municipality in the region and the third of northeast Italy.
I love the internet.
That's so great.
It's amazing.
Such as the
wait till we're all plugged in and you can just go, you know, just blink.
The arena, maybe it was the Verona Arena?
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, that
holy
was
holy cow, this
that
is beautiful.
Was that was
if
it.
If you're at a computer, Google the Verona Arena. It was built in the this is also what I love about the internet and just looking at photos and just like and this can segue a little bit into Legends of Tomorrow because
yeah.
this is like because that's essentially it's like a time travel show
yeah
and you and just reading this the Verona Arena which you were in was built in first century it was
wow.
built in the first century so we're in the 21st century or no we're in yeah, we're in the 21st century right now. So it was built 20 centuries ago.
Isn't that crazy?
That's so long ago, dude.
Yeah.
It is still in use today and is in internationally famous for the large-scale opera performances given there.
Halfway through Carter Hall's time on Earth, it was built.
Yeah.
To segue.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah, that is really crazy.
In ancient times, nearly 30,000 people was the housing capacity of the arena. Nowadays, for security reasons, the maximum attendance is 15,000.
All right.
So they would – that's just like – and you see like – you watch like movies like Gladiator or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean those are movies, but then you see these giant structures and you know like people from all around – like that's the only place for any form of like entertainment or festival or whatever. And people are just cramming in there to watch opera or to watch, you know, old Shakespeare or whatever.
Yeah.
That's wild. This is a beautiful building.
It's funny. I think you literally pinpointed my favorite venue.
That
stood out in my memory.
I mean, just look at
the
these, like just the architecture. Like why can't they make like, places like that, like make the Greek look like that. Make the Hollywood Bowl look like this.
Hollywood Bowl is pretty cool, though.
That's a pretty cool.
I love the venue in general.
I mean, inside is cool, but put some walls up around it.
Right.
put some ruins around it.
Yeah.
Carter Hall, Hawkman. Mm-hmm. What's it like playing him? He was created by Gardner Fox and Dennis Neville. And if you want to talk about old, his first appearance was in Flash Comics number 1 in 1940.
Wow. So he was among the first.
Yeah.
And I know that Carter and Kendra were, I think, the first superhero couple.
Okay.
I think they created the first dynamic duo.
In 1940, I could see that because I mean, aside from like Wonder Woman and all them, they weren't even like a couple yet. And I don't, let's see here, when, unless it was, let's see, because that's actually a good, let's see, Fantastic, I'm just going to look up Fantastic Four, because that would be the only other, like, couple I would be able to think of.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And they weren't, their first appearance was 1961. Okay. So if Hawkman, if they were both in 20 years prior to that, then they would definitely be the first superhero couple.
First ones, yeah. It's a great character. You know, I mean, somebody who's 4,000 years old and has seen what he's seen and has the memories of it. There's just so many things that you can do.
Yeah.
I think probably even too much. Like, I keep saying I want to do more, but we have to, especially in the beginning of a show, there's so much to establish.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't really have time to go, and I keep saying, like, oh, let's just have a scene where they discuss stuff. You know, about,
you know, I mean, that'd be my jam right there. Right. Just discussing like old history and
or see it, you know, like, let's go see it. But that said, you know, I mean, there's so much potential to do that later on. I hope they will, creators and writers and producers.
Yeah.
But, I just think that's what drew me to the character was, I keep calling him the uncle of society. You know, he's sort of like just been there all along and been like, seen the rise of it, the fall of it, the good, the bad, the struggle, the victories. And I think that's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. You know?
Good and bad.
Yeah, to embody that, just the, to like take that knowledge that character has over time and just, you know, that's definitely, you know, it's a cool character concept and idea. Mm-hmm. That you have this hero over time that's experienced almost every incarnation of society and technology and, and downfall and rising and, you know, the highs and falls of civilizations.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And
probably in my mind, at least, the way I create his backstory is because he had powers or has powers, he probably was able to get close to some very powerful people and get to pick their brain.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
So to me, it's just... I keep playing in my head so much with his backstory, even if it's not necessary, even if the scene is all about, you know, going after Savage or whatever we're doing. I just love reminiscing as the character.
Yeah. And there are two separate origins for Carter Hall. There's the Golden Age origin and the post-Hawk world, which is in the comics, the current origin. Now, your origin, I was reading, seems to be more along in tune with the Golden Age kind of with Vandal being like replacing I can't remember the other guy's name, but where it was like a feud between the three, like was the love type of a triangle
and the reincarnation mythology, and
because the current one, I guess, has like there was like a spaceship that crashed or something back in Egypt that you found, and that's at least so far, I guess, in the Arrows and in the episodes I've seen, you're primarily the Golden Age.
Yes.
Carter Hall. Yeah. That's great. That's something too. Like we were talking about, like how we went from lighters to cell phones. Then you have this character who's like my aunt Rita, my great aunt died last week or a week ago. Yeah, she's 91 years old.
She lived a good life.
Good life. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that and people are apologizing and I'm like, you can't even really say she died. Because she lived like 91, like she was born like 20 years before the microwave was created and sold and all that. And it's like, come on, guys, like that's bananas to me.
I'm like doing the math. So it's 2000.
She was born in like 40 or something like that.
Okay.
And, or 20, I don't know. She was 91.
Yeah.
And the microwave, I remember doing the math when I went and visited her over the holidays when I was back home in Michigan for Christmas. And look, I mean, she was a ghost town. I mean, pretty much, I was on my phone, though. She's very incoherent. She was 91. But prior to that, she'd still remember things and she still would mix things up. But she was cognizant enough. But to think, and I remember doing the math, and it was like, she was like, there was like a good 20 years before her birth and the microwave. But then you got like the radios and the televisions. And like, and I'm sitting in front of her on this iPhone 6 that has like the world. Talk you can do Siri. Anything. You can do Siri. You can watch movies. You can watch video. You can watch anything. And just that life. And then you take someone like Carter Hall almost, where it's like, it's such a like people always say, if you had a time machine, where would you go? And I always say the future, because the past is awesome, but I can read about the past on this. Right. It's like I'm envious of the people who can – like I'm envious of my nephews right now who might just make that cusp of living to be in the three digits. Right. You know, I think we're going to unfortunately miss it by a little bit.
You really think
unless
so?
We get hit by a car. Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, I also think like –
I mean, don't know because
– they're replacing – I mean I really –
I'm really hoping we can make it. I'm really hoping we hit it.
I feel like in the next 40 years, you don't think they'll start this whole – fake heart.
Oh,
stuff,
I hope so,
fake
dude.
Brain. I mean, honestly, I think it'll all be body parts. You know,
I hope so.
I don't know how long. That's a good question. How long would you want to live?
Oh yeah, that's okay.
How long do you want to? Do you want to be around? Do you want to be around that long? And let's say
I'm really good at making friends younger than me.
Okay.
But good condition. Okay,
you're in good condition. Let's say we just, you know, you're going to be 45, and then from then on, you won't age much anymore, looks wise, because of the technology that will keep you young.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Okay, because this is a perfect example. This is one of those things where it's like, would you rather have a fully functioning brain and a body in like with a walker or a wheelchair, or would you rather be fully functioning but be losing, you know, have like Alzheimer's almost? But if I'm fully like. Like if I'm what I am now, only maybe 35 years, maybe I'm 33, going to be 34. But say when I turn 45, if I'm a healthy 45 year old, and I stay that for predominantly however long, you know, that's a good question, because I definitely would love to see inner space travel, and I definitely would love to see life on Mars, and I would definitely love to experience that type of a thing. And I like technology and all that, but there's something, you know, I used to always say I want to live forever, and I'd love to be able to like if you could take my body, my brain, and like upload my consciousness and put this exact person into like a robot body or something like that, so I could live forever with like an off switch. So when I finally give up, but there's something to be said, like, if are my friends coming with me? Are my friends doing that also? Because I can make new friends, but at some point, everybody's just going to be dying off. And what's there to experience just on your own learning-wise
right.
if you really are constantly – you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Unless they stuck around with you, you know?
Maybe 100 years. I could do 100 years for sure.
Yeah.
But even that is just like – that's a long time.
That's
like,
a long time.
I mean, I'm 33 is a long time. You know, 91's – my aunt's 91's a long time. But I don't know. What about you? Like if you could stay yourself right now, like if I had a trunk – and I open up this trunk, and there was like a shimmering light, and I gave you this thing, like or like this potion. Like, do you remember Death Becomes Her with Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
So I gave you this potion that Goldie Hawn got from that other girl, and you could drink it, and you could be you for however
long
you
decide. I want to have a family. That's one thing. So I think I can do that with my regular lifetime. Hopefully, knock on wood.
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, I don't know that I would stick around that much longer, because I think for me, what you guys just said, you're really excited to see space time travel. I think part of, depending on what your beliefs are, but for me specifically, I think death itself and whatever it is after, that sounds so corny, but is a great journey or adventure that I'm really interested in.
Yeah.
Now I have to be really careful saying that out loud. Because I'm not talking about being suicidal or anything like that.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I just think it's another, like what you said, your aunt?
Yeah, my aunt.
Your grand aunt. She didn't die. She, you know, she moved on.
Yeah.
And I always like that term, moved on, like where to?
Yeah.
You know, because I do think, we evolve in technology and we do space travel, but I'm like, it's kind of repetitive.
Yeah.
You know, at first we walk, then we have the cart, but we always just travel faster. Yeah. And
I mean, at some point, it's all the same sort form of.
Right. Yeah. But what I am really interested in, what I'm really enjoying is there seems to be a journey. I'm just realizing how corny this must be.
There's a journey inside of us. No, I get it. I mean, like, I'm all about self-awakening.
Self-awakening, you know, I feel like, and also I'm like, unless I get really good at it, the whole thing of, you know, how we, our life to me is a revolving door of contrast and then joy. Contrast, joy. And contrast meaning hard times, struggling a little bit, which motivates you to the next thing that you want in life.
Which also helps make that joy more noted. Enhances the joy.
Totally.
Like at some point, if you're just on a constant, like at some point, happiness and joy that you speak
become
of
become boredom.
Become boredom.
Yeah,
if you're, you know, if everything's hunky dory,
you don't
all
know
the
what
time.
To do anymore. I feel like most of my "this is what I want" came from knowing, I don't want that.
Yeah.
So now I know what I want. But anyway, saying that is, unless I get really good and fast at that I'm more in the joy zone and I'm really enjoying the creative process more consciously. If I get really, really good at that, enlightened, whatever you want to call it, then I could see sticking around for quite a long time just to see what I could create with people together. But if not, I also just sometimes think, man, that must just be tiring. Can you imagine 120 years of this human struggle that we're dealing with all our lives?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing too, is it's like, is it another 120 years of what I'm doing right now?
Right. Right. And that is not to like...
I mean, I'm having a blast right now, but I would also... I mean, part of that would be like, I guess if I could travel, if the world would understand that everything that we have is awesome, like all the architecture and all the rainforest and all these ruins, I would almost be content with, as long as I can see all the magnificent ruins and architecture and like historical civilizations that this planet has, like, you know, Verona or like Egypt or, you know, Mexico and the catacombs and, or, you know, Machu Picchu and things like that. If I could explore all of those things and witness everything in human, you know, the human history, I could be done. Like if I could do all of that and really have a sense for it at 120, 130 years old, I could probably maybe say, okay, you know what? I'm done. Take me to Mars and I'll die there.
Right.
I don't know. But then again, it's like if you want to have a family, then you're going to have grandkids and you're going to have great grandkids. And if you have the ability to see all of them grow up.
Yeah, but I think after your great-grandkid, you're like, stay away with it. I'm not changing the diapers. I'm not helping out anymore. I've helped three generations. But that just to segue back into Carter, you know, I think that's another thing that I think is really interesting about his character, that struggle, you know, between... Oh, God, I'm so tired of this.
Yeah.
Can I say swear?
Yeah. Say whatever you
want. I'm so tired of this shit, you know? Yeah. Like, let's just call it a day. Sometimes just, you know, welcoming Vandal, I would say. And on the other hand, just sort of have what you had, I'm sure there's still plenty of stuff he enjoys about Earth, and especially, you know, the love he has with Kendra. And he wants to keep creating and enjoying. So it's this really fun struggle between the two of them.
Yeah.
That I think is really lovely about is that a penis candle?
Yes, it is.
That is hilarious. Why is that here?
There's some of those more of it. There's a show called Bizarre States on the podcast network, and they dabble in like paranormal and energies and things like that. And supposedly I remember him saying something about that's supposed to be like you light it and it gives off some form of like whatever you're saying?
Sexual prowess?
A little bit, yeah.
Can we light it?
Yeah, where do we buy those at?
www.peniscandles.com.
Redpeniscandlesinaglass.com.
Sorry, that was Brandon.
No, that's great. That reminds me, there was there's a place called the Time History Museum or something in Echo Park. Like, it's like a kitschy thing. And they have similar candles where it's just like, you know, the glass jar, and it's filled with like purple wax or whatever. And on the like some candles will have like Mary or Jesus on them or whatever. This one has like Stephen Hawking, and it says like the patron saint of time travel. And it's like you light it, and it's supposed to give you like slow time down or something like that. But That's definitely that's almost like you say it's very almost like reminiscent. Your character is almost reminiscent of Bill Murray's in Groundhog Day, almost where you're constantly you're reincarnated. You can't give up. Like you're constantly like there's no real way. There's no way for you to just end it because you die and then you come back.
Yeah,
and you die and you come back.
And that was, to be honest, if anyone cares to know, but that was the hardest part about playing him.
Yeah.
And I still struggle with it. Like, I keep asking the writers, why the hell does he care? You know? And it was even pointed out in Flash where I was like, oh, should we point this out? You know, he says, you're 0 for 206.
Yeah.
I
remember that.
You're a best bet.
Yeah.
You know,
that was Cisco, right? Or who's
that was Cisco.
Cisco.
And to be honest, my original take, I think one of the first takes I did was sort of like, you know, like, yeah, no, he's got a point. The kid's got a point. Like, you know,
yeah.
I'm not very good at this.
Yeah.
But then I came to find, you know, after like being like, why, and talking to the writers, I think for me personally, I came to found is because he doesn't really fight to defeat him, in my opinion, until we come to Legends and he sees him as an actual chance of winning. He comes to fight to be with Kendra.
Yeah.
You know, he comes to fight to be with the one person that he can sit and have coffee with, and once her memories come back, say, "Hey, remember when we did this? Remember this?" And have an argument with because they know each other.
Yeah,
because like you said before, outliving all your friends, like he has outlived everybody. He's completely alone.
Yeah,
so I think his fight is for love, as corny as it sounds, but for the chance to be with the one person that eventually we'll know him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like a love story because in the end, like if I even recall from, cause I seen the two episodes that
Okay.
I seen the first two and I loved them. They're really great. It's, I was telling Brandon, it's reminiscent of like Doctor Who with superheroes, which is great. But without talking too much about and giving anything away from these two episodes, I even recall like in the Flash Arrow crossover, I believe they said soon as you two really meet up, that's when Vandal kinds of senses you guys. Right. So it's almost like it's a bummer because you find each other and you get this love growing again. And then this dude comes in and he starts, and that's why you're fighting, because otherwise if you don't fight for it, then you just stay split up and you continue living.
Yeah.
But where's that if you can't love each other, you know, your true loves.
Yeah.
So it's really, I guess, thinking about it and hearing about it and thinking, you know, it seems that, you know, the Carter Hall is, it's the love that's really keeping you going.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that girl that you like.
And to be honest with you, at first I judged it as corny.
Yeah.
And then, you know, really dealing with the subject, I was like, you know what? No, not at all, because that is kind of what we all go for. Money is just a substitute for love.
Yeah.
Everything is just a substitute for love in our society.
And
this guy right here can't connect to anyone because nobody's like him. And this is the only one he can. So he's fighting for love, you know, even if he does die.
At least until, you know, he recruits with all these other, you know, these powerful beings, and at least there's some semblance of, okay, we, you know, we're not normal human beings, you know, and at least that's
But even there, there's, I mean, I don't know what you thought, but even there, I think he still has a bit of a standoffishness towards him, because I mean, whoop-de-doo, you're all superheroes.
Yeah.
He's probably met a bunch of them.
Exactly. Over time, he's had other teams, you know.
You know, he's probably hung out with other superheroes that haven't even been created yet.
Yeah. Well, like even in the comics world, there was the Justice Society before he got on board with the Justice League and all that. So it's like...
So it's like, you know, even there, my point, you know, always was like, well, why does he care now?
Yeah.
You know, he's had allies before, but... You know, I think there's this time when you watch the pilot, you find out why. But there's a real shot at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Were you, because as it is, as you know, it's essentially a time travel show.
Yeah.
Were you a fan growing up of like time travel movies or shows or anything?
Yeah, I love
like
Back to the Future. I loved what was the show? Quantum Leap.
Quantum Leap.
Quantum Leap. I just
Scott Bakula.
Rewatched it. Yeah, I haven't really rewatched it, so I can't really tell you if I would still like it or not. But I loved it.
That was great. I remember
it was just the fact that he jumped into these, you know, cool time periods and got to fix history a little bit.
Yeah. As someone else.
Yeah, as someone else. He always looks in the mirror and he sees who he really is.
Yeah.
I was pushing for that on this show, to do that with Egypt, you know, that...
Yeah.
Yeah, I play them all. I understand that. I'm the actor. It's good for me, you know, because they can't... I'm Carter, but I was like, what if he looks in the mirror and he, you know, he's an Egyptian prince and it's a different actor, and that way we can like all kinds of time zones. But anyway, that was sort of my homage to Quantum Leap. I loved that so much.
That was such a good show. Yeah. You should you could easily talk them into writing Cisco into having one of those little light things that was his, what was his buddy in Quantum Leap?
Oh yeah, Al.
He had that little like the light up like to me as a kid it always looked like light up Legos.
Totally.
But it was like that little light box.
Yeah.
You could always have like that'd be funny if you could, you know, tie into that. But Quantum Leap was great. Back to the Future was great. Back always a fan of those.
What was another good time travel? I guess
Time Machine. Bill and Ted's, I guess.
Bill and Ted.
That goes into different eras. Yeah, you know, that would go. That was even more almost than like Back to the Future, whereas like Bill and it would go. It went to like the Wild West Italy and Greece.
Yeah, no, I love them. I think time travel is a you know, endless opportunity of telling stories. Yeah. And whenever we get closer to maybe doing it for real, we're getting closer of like being like more accurate on the mythology of it. Yeah. You know, I mean, that has changed so much.
Oh, man.
You know, people are actually trying to now create a mythology that might make sense.
Yeah.
You know, whereas back then it was like, it's a car. And
it does this. It's like, in theory, if you're going back in time, the Earth's going to be in a completely different place.
Right. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, because the Earth is constantly moving and rotating, which means our galaxies are also rotating and moving. So if you're going to actually go back in time, like even if say you were in a stagnant car, or say this room was a time machine and we punched in, let's go back 100 years ago, this room is going to time travel in this spot, but in theory –
in space, it wouldn't.
Space and the Earth and everything would be in.
So we'd be hanging out in the
could and hang. We could appear in like the ozone layer, or we could appear out in just middle of space. Because in theory, everything as the thousands of years in the Big Bang, everything's getting pushed out.
That would be a great way to start. They create a time machine. They do it. They're aware of what you just said.
Yeah.
So they put it in a spaceship.
Yeah.
And then they're floating, and they know they're in, you know,
safe.
1300.
That's a safe
but they
thing.
Don't know,
yeah.
You know, what galaxy where...
Or where Earth is.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's a good idea. You were in Night and Day.
Yes.
Now, I got to tell you this. I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan.
Yeah.
And I had Catherine Hardwick, who she directed Twilight, and she directed... she worked on Vanilla Sky and some other things as, like, production designer and stuff like that with Tom Cruise. And she told us some... She told me some fun Tom Cruise stories. So...
Good ones?
They were fun. They were fun ones. So I got to ask you, do you have any fun, cool Tom Cruise stories? Because I always, I love stories with Tom Cruise because I'm such a big fan of his, and I hear nothing but good things about him.
Yeah, no, that's.
So it's like, I love hearing these great, you know?
I'm going to add to that. I mean, I don't, you know, he's got all this controversial stuff built up around him, but I personally have never experienced anything but a really extremely professional, extremely good at what he does, professional. And kind person, you know, he's he knows everybody's name on set, like everyone, and that's something that I thought was very important that I myself then try to do that respect, you know, to just be like, look, everybody's important. He is really good at his job, and he's a badass, you know. What is he now, 50?
Something like that.
And he's still hanging off of planes. I mean, I'll give it to him. I'm already now feeling like, oh, like, I got to stay in the same shape that I am now if I want to continue these.
53 years old.
I mean, that is crazy. He's got another.
He's doing all his own stunts, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really, to be honest with you, I really, that was a great movie star to break my Hollywood film cherry.
Yeah.
It was nothing but, and also, to be honest, it was a bit of a, it was great sparring because I was aware, even though it was my first film, I was like, all right. I'm going to have the scene with Tom. I'm fighting him, so I can't be starstruck. I can't. And I was intimidated.
Yeah.
But I was like, nah, if, you know, I remember we did something in the scene, and I just made a point, not randomly, but to disagree with him or to disagree with something. And we had a little back and forth, and he had better points, so he won the argument. But I was like, I just need to make sure that since I got to be his opponent, I can't have that energy on screen where I'm like, oh, it's Tom Cruise, you know? Because that won't work. So that was a really good lesson, too, to just sort of be like, look, in the end of the day, focus on the project. What's the story? And do your job. And everybody around you, yeah, they might be like more experienced, they might be famous or whatever, but they're just pros like you, and they have more experience. So learn from them, but leave all the other stuff aside that Hollywood and our society likes to build up around people, you know.
Yeah.
Does it make any sense?
It does, absolutely.
Yeah, so it was a great, I was really happy. And same for Cameron. Cameron Diaz was phenomenal, and she was very personable and helped me a lot in my career, just from what I've learned from watching her doing on the screen, conversations. Like, I'm very grateful. Both of them probably have no idea that they had that impact on me, but it was a great, great experience. James Mangold. I'm just giving shout outs.
Yeah, no. It's a funny movie, too.
Yeah, I thought it was a terrific
movie. I liked it.
I thought it was fantastic. I thought the publicity of it,
yeah,
the way they sold it, you know, wasn't what I expected. Let's put
it that way. They kind of pitched it and packaged it as a different movie than what it was, because it was like an action movie, but it was also...
It was a comedy. Yeah.
It was a comedy action movie. And I feel like they didn't play that up enough. Because I remember going in and being completely thrown for a loop, laughing as much as I did at the things that I laughed at.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in the commercials and everything, it seemed more like it was like a spy, like who is he, you know.
And many people didn't know about it either. Yeah. Like the poster didn't have – you pay for Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz and didn't have their faces on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a lovely movie to be a part of.
That's great.
I'd do it again.
Absolutely. I've had this fact here for a bit on waiting to bring it up for a few different episodes now. In this episode, it actually works because it ties in with Carter Hall and Egypt and all that type of stuff. Lettuce was first cultivated by the ancient Egyptians, who turned it from a weed whose seeds were used to produce oil into a food plant grown for its succulent leaves. Lettuce spread to the Greeks and Romans, the latter of whom gave it the name lactusa, from which the English lettuce is ultimately derived. So lettuce comes from Egypt.
Wow.
Which is
what a great fact.
Yeah.
How did you?
I'll do, like, there's a few different websites that'll have like random facts and things like that. And then when things interest me, like, I hate lettuce. I can't stand it. Lettuce and raisins are two of my biggest things I hate. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, this guy. So I thought about looking, you know, things like that will interest me on occasion. Like, where does this thing come from?
Carter Hall actually invented
that. you gotta. I'll give you $1 if Ray Palmer or Martin Stein.
Yeah.
Martin Stein, is that his name, right?
Throws in that fact.
If they're talking about things they invented, I just want Carter Hall to come in and be like, I invented lettuce, guys.
That would be amazing. I hope the writers are listening to this. That would be so cool.
Hey, guys, I invented lettuce. Settle down.
Yeah.
Or just anything, because in theory, if he's, you know, an immortal and he's been reincarnated, he could have invented, you know.
Yeah, totally.
He could have easily invented things.
He could have been a lot of mythical.
Yeah.
Figures in our time.
Absolutely.
Not to put myself out there on a limb, but like Jesus, you know,
I mean,
he was weird enough to like be resurrected.
He ascended into heaven, you know?
Heaven.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he faked the death and then took his wings. I mean, there's a lot to play with with this guy. So, but the lettuce thing, I'm gonna keep that in mind and see if we can
plug lettuce, that. Guys. Or have you be the one who shot Kennedy?
Yeah, and there was a really good reason for it, because he was actually possessed or something by one of Vandal's people. Yeah, that, I mean, there's so much stuff.
If any of the writers are listening, I'll take a job on your staff. I'll be a writer's assistant. I'll fly up to Vancouver and you film in Vancouver, right?
Film in Vancouver, but the writer's room is here.
Okay, well, hey, guys. I live in Culver City, so I can get there in 20 minutes or less. Legends of Tomorrow. Let's talk about that.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. You're coming out. It's the 20th, right? Or the 21st?
The
20th. So it airs. So it'll be. It airs on Wednesday. So this will come out on Monday. So this will come out before the second episode.
Second episode. Or third. I mean, it's a two-part pilot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So but the first part is that do they both air? It airs on it starts on the 20th, right?
Yeah, yes, correct.
And are they both back to back, or they're split up? It's a two part.
I think it's back to back. Like, I don't quote me on this, but I think it's a It's a 2-hour opening, or like, you know.
Because Arrow comes back tonight too, I think, right?
On Wednesday.
On Wednesday. Tonight.
And then tomorrow, I think it's 2 hours for Legends, or an hour and a half. But it's a 2-part pilot, I think.
Okay.
I don't think they
don't,
split that.
Don't quote us on this. But
yeah, don't quote us on this.
But I think. We think.
We think, yeah.
What was it like getting that, like going out for that then and getting the call saying, hey, you're going to play this iconic hero who's been around since the, you know, the 40s? Did that take, like, was there thought of, because with every super, I mean, maybe not so much more now because a lot of people, and it's, there's so much of it. But I know, you know, in the 80s and even in the 90s, actors would be hesitant to take on these iconic roles of fear of typecasting.
I think that has eased up a little bit. But I think that's more, you run that risk, I think, when you play an iconic character for a really long time.
Yeah.
You know, and people just see you as that. But honestly, with you, like, I feel like it's up to you to make your own career and make the right moves, you know. I never have much sympathy when somebody says, oh, they can't get a, you know. Let's just say Downey Jr. wouldn't get anything else that's different than Iron Man. Well, take $20 million of your money and make your own film and write yourself a different
brand. Right? Absolutely.
Those are champagne problems.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And as far as my reaction to it, it was kind of – there wasn't a big buildup. Let's put it this way. I had to make a tape. And I read it, and I was like, all right, make a tape. And here's the thing. My history with the CW is that they've seen me many times for meetings for Arrow. I think Flash. I think I read even the script for Flash, and I was supposed to audition for it. And I was like, I don't think that I fit the description. I didn't. And anyway, there was all this backstory, and I came in for other villains and this and that. Yeah. And it never worked out. So to be honest with you, when I got this, I was like, audition number 20, I'll make a tape, you know, and I really loved the character, but I didn't really get too attached to it because I was like, maybe I'm not their type or whatever, you know. So I made the tape, and then when they were like, this is great, you know, we want you.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool. You know, I was really surprised. And then I started to really sort of look into, okay, what's it going to be like to play and what can I do here, you know, beyond of what I created for the casting process. Also, there was no script, so they wrote mock sides for the tapes that I made. So I was really curious to see what I was going to sign on for, and it took, you know, some trust. We met up, and I just had some questions about the character and the show. And so it was calm, but I was really happy to get to play him.
That's great. That's awesome. I'm looking it up here. It's going to be airing on Thursdays.
Yeah.
So it premiered last Thursday, and then it's looking like they're splitting it up. So it's going to be the 2-part pilot over 2 weeks.
Ah, okay.
So the next part, if you haven't caught up, if you're listening to the show, check it out. It's a really, really fun show. Watch the find a way to watch the previous episode from last week. Then on the CW this week, this Thursday, check out the second part of the pilot for Legends of Tomorrow. It's a really fun show.
Yeah.
Falk, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. This has been fun.
This was fun. I honestly could have kept going and going.
We'd love to have you back.
Yeah, I'd love to come back. Yeah.
This is fun. Where can everybody find you on the internet or anything like that? Or do you have anything else you want to plug real quick? Any other projects or films coming out that you want to pass a word for?
I'm writing at the moment. So I'm creating, working on some feature ideas, and we've had a show with UCP, Universal's TV department, and Blumhouse, actually, and Bo Flynn that we've been developing. So I can't say more than that. We're just developing a show together. You can find me on Instagram, Falk Henschel, or at the Falk Twitter. My Facebook page, fan page, Falk Henschel. I'd love to see you guys there. And thanks for having me.
That's awesome. Thank you very much. Legends of Tomorrow on the CW Thursday nights. Check it out. Watch it. It's super fun. You can follow us on Twitter at Today We Learned. TWL Podcast on Twitter at TWL Podcast on Twitter. Today We Learned with Razzle and Dan on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a review and a couple stars there on the iTunes. Help us climb those charts. Today We Learned. You can shoot us an email. You got a fun fact or a correction. Today We Learned podcast at gmail.com. You can follow Dan at Osteoferocious on Twitter. You can follow me at My Name Is Razzle 2 on Twitter. And as always, let us. Why would we want to be us? I don't know. Lettuce and raisins are the devil, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Falk. Watch the Legends of Tomorrow. And everybody, tune in next week. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.